If you need expert financial advice you can both understand and trust on your savings and investments, retirement planning, equity release or life and health insurance, talk to the experts at Facts and Figures Chartered Financial Planners. Phone 01233 722 922 or check them out at www.fffp.co.uk. Facts and Figures. Independent financial advice everyone can follow. www.fffp.co.uk. I'm off my jack, keep your hands off my
stack. Jobsinkent.com. RIFT Research and Development. Reuniting innovators and business tax credits. RIFTResearch.com.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker show on kentbusinessradio.co.uk on this Tuesday, the 22nd of March, with me, Paul Andrews, and the stunkingly gorgeous Jill Sutton.
I just noticed you're drinking a very ancient drink there.
Vimto.
Vimto?
Yeah.
I mean, what does that taste like?
Vimto.
I don't think I've ever had one. Don't think I've ever had a Vimto.
What's Vimto taste like? Vimto.
But it's from another era, isn't it? Vimto.
Well, I didn't buy it that long ago. I only bought it yesterday.
It's a little bit like Iron Brew, isn't it?
It's not Tizer.
Well, do you remember Tizer?
I do remember Tizer.
Is that still around?
It's very rare. You don't see it very often, but apparently you can still buy it, Tizer.
You know, when you're pregnant, you have cravings.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
When I was having my second daughter, Sydney, I had terrible cravings for old-fashioned cream soda, but the real old-fashioned. And my poor new husband had to rush out at like 9 o'clock at night to find the old-fashioned cream soda.
In Sainsbury's, no other supermarkets are available.
No.
In Sainsbury's, they do, they're the only ones I know, they do sugar-free, one-calorie cream soda.
Really, but what does does it taste old fashioned?
No, it's horrible, but it is cream soda, and I love cream soda.
Well, I do, but the old fashioned one has got a very, very different taste.
Yeah, but this has got no sugar in it, it's just one calorie a can.
Yeah, but you see, I hate to be a bugbear, but the old sweeteners are not very good for you.
I could drink 290,000 cans of it.
You've worked it out.
If I walked from Tenterton to the studio,
he's worked it out, listener.
Yeah. I couldn't carry them all, of course, but there you go. Mm.
I found out that my friend Taywell, Alistair Jessel, is available in Scotland.
Boy, is he?
In Scotland, yeah.
He gets around that boy, doesn't he?
His ice cream.
Absolutely. We've had a tweet from Dinky Ones.
Oh, really? What are they?
Dinky Ones EYC, they're called on the Twitter, and they say, Vanillaware Business Bunker, please could we have a shout-out, Paul? The Startup Business Woman of the Year would definitely like to... for you to say hi. Well done.
Dinky Ones.
Yeah, Dinky Ones. I'm not sure what Dinky Ones do. Shall I see if I can find out?
It must be something small and sweet, really.
I would imagine it's dinky.
Shall I read something while you do?
No, you can find out. The easiest way is to follow them on the Twitter, and then you can find out all about what the Startup Business Woman of the Year and her company, Dinky Ones, EYC, do.
Well,
I'm
looking at my Twitter, and it's the lovely Andrew Knott, who says, "Hi, Jules and Paul. Not much mention of you, mostly me." He says, "A shout-out, please, for FSB Energy. They saved Morgans of Margate £5,000 on their electricity."
What, do they walk?
Well, it's pretty amazing, isn't it? £5,000. Mm. He says, "On their electricity today." I left the today out because I think that could be misleading. I think he meant today they managed it, don't you?
Or to date.
But that £5,000 is incredible. What I want to know is, what are Morgans of Margate going to do with the £5,000?
Right, okay.
That's what I want to
know. Maybe they'll tell us.
Elsie Mo Diner chipping in, saying, "Loving the show." That's the diner, USA Diner in Canterbury Burgate. Hello to you.
Cool.
Who else you got? Oh, Andrew Knott again has popped up. Well, he's AK Knott, Nott 20 on the Twitter. He says, "Hi, Jules Serkin, and not much mention of you. Hi, Jules. Can you shout out, please, if you are interested in hearing more about the Federation of Small Businesses, please call Andrew 07747 114627.
Cool.
Hello to you.
Do you know what?
What?
We're going to talk to our next guest.
Let's.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the show Mr. Peter Allen of Macaroni Accounting. I'm sorry about the cheesy record, Life is a Minestrone. It was the only record I could find that we had on our... We've got 135,000 songs on our database, and it was the only one with macaroni in it, surprisingly. I don't know why.
Yeah, you don't write a lot about macaroni, do you?
There is a song... Sorry to interrupt. This is completely irrelevant and of no interest at all. There is actually a song called Macaroni Soup, but we didn't have a copy of it, and I have no idea what it sounds like. But anyway, enough. Peter, welcome to the Business Bunker Show. Absolute pleasure to have you on the show today. Why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about Peter and macaroni?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on the show. Oh, it was Martin that invited me on, so thank you very much, Martin. Macaroni Accounting is a general practice accountancy firm based in Ashford in the Kent Space Building, as we discussed earlier. We were a year old 2 weeks ago. I've been in accountancy for 25 years.
He doesn't look old enough, does he?
No, he doesn't.
No.
In fact, Paul, I picked up what you said at the Pfizer's last week. I was born the year you started working.
Oh, dear.
But anyway.
Punch him, someone, please.
Say
that again.
I was born the same year.
Don't encourage her, Peter.
Sorry, Paul.
We've
been going just over a year now. I've been in accountancy all my life. It's all I've ever done. I had was at school with maths was about the only thing I was any good at. So I walked into accountancy with open arms, wanting to learn about it.
Sure.
And what we do now is as Martin was saying about the collaboration, we're looking to collaborate with other businesses in the Kent area to help them to grow, help us to grow, and just generally improve the business community in Kent, because it hasn't done great. As well as it might have done in the last few years. So we're hoping to help everyone to grow.
Absolutely. Now, accountancy is one of those strange animals, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's something that every business needs, and quite a few businesses wish they didn't. And there's also quite a lot of confusion, not helped by the fact that the government regularly change things anyway. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they are about, I think, either they have just or are just about to change again the audit requirements on small businesses. They've changed the thresholds again.
They have, yeah.
But there are lots of things that you can use an accountant for. And one of my big things is this. Unlike you, when I left school and started work, celebrating your birth, Peter, one of the reasons I was required to leave school is because me and maths just didn't get on at all. And it's never been something that I've been particularly interested in. Mm-hmm. And when I first started in business, I always found it, really onerous and stuff like that, talking about accounts and all the rest of it. But as I went forward in business, I came to realize just how important, one, a good accountant is, and two, just how important being able to read a balance sheet and a profit and loss is. You cannot be in business if you can't do those two things, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You should not be in business if you can't read a balance sheet and you can't read a profit and loss account and if you don't know your basic numbers. Mm. But one of the big things that I now tell people, I operate as an angel investor and I invest in startup businesses, and the first thing I tell people is there are three professional services you will need, and you will think all three of them are far too expensive where you are in the startup process, and you are wrong. You need a good lawyer, a good accountant, and a good insurance broker, because without those three things, you don't have a business, and you have to have that. But it's about establishing a relationship with an accountant.
Yeah.
That's the key thing for me. Sorry, I'm giving a rant about this.
Right,
for me, I think it's really important. From your point of view, tell us a little bit about your business itself. What kind of clients do you handle? Do you have a specialist field, or are you a general accountant? How does it work?
Well, there's a team of five of us at Macaroni. We don't do audits.
Sorry to interrupt. Mm. Why Macaroni?
It was actually my business partner, Paul, who came up with the name.
Was it Paul Macaroni? Is that his name?
No, it's not actually.
No, it's Jeff Spaghetti, actually.
Yeah. No, he just randomly came up with his name. He said, the idea is to build a brand, because most accountants are named after the guys who founded
the firm. Splodge and
in 1928, and no one really cares, because they're dead.
Yeah.
So we thought, we'll come up with a name, Macaroni, because, you talk about doing your hoovering at home. Well, you know what? You're using the vacuum cleaner. Hoover's the brand name.
Yeah.
Macaroni is the brand name. Google's the brand name.
Yeah.
What you're doing is using a search engine.
Yeah.
Where everyone says, oh, I'll Google it.
Yeah.
And that was the thinking behind it. So.
Absolutely. And just, you know, just while we're on that, I mean, that is important thinking because to me, that signals that you're an organization that's thinking about the future and thinking ahead. Mm. You're absolutely right. Back in the day, back in the 17th century or whatever, a lot of organizations, professional organizations, are just named after the founders.
Yeah, exactly.
And you now have firms that have founders' names that have nothing to do even with, you know, so they might even be relatives still alive that are still in that profession but don't even work for the firm because the mergers over the years and you still end up called Smith, Smith and Smith.
Yeah.
And grab it. Or whatever.
Grab it and lick it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, they're lawyers.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that you went for the brand route direction, which very few still do. So macaroni. Yeah, I like it. Cool. Sorry to interrupt, right. But it was interesting. So you were telling us about the philosophy of macaroni, and you have five partners, and you were going to kind of enlighten us if there's any area of specialism, whether you're general accountants and how that all works.
Well, there's not five partners, there's five staff.
Myself
and Paul and the three guys that work with us. We don't do any audit work because I qualified that long ago. I don't have the right qualifications. And with the audit threshold, as you said, Paul, going up, it actually went up on the 1st of January.
Right.
So hang on, you qualified ages and ages and ages ago. But
he's not as young as he claims.
But you were still just being born when Paul Andrews...
Oh, yeah, for goodness sake.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, okay,
yes,
just sorry. Wanted to just make sure about that.
Rub it in a bit more, yeah.
It was sorry, a very Paul. Long time ago, then.
It was a long time ago, yeah. Well, I qualified as a captain in 1995. That's how long ago it was.
That's 20 years ago.
Yeah exactly. So, so the rules have changed. The audit threshold went up to 10.1 million turnover for any county period starting on or after the 1st of January 2016. Mm. So, you know, more and more businesses now have had that red tape taken away from them and actually get on with running a business rather than dealing with that nonsense. So we don't do any audit work. We do general practice. We mainly have limited company clients. We do have a few self-employed guys, but we want to focus on limited company businesses, small businesses similar to ourselves.
Yep.
When we're a startup business ourselves, we do work with startups. We encourage them to pay us on a monthly standing order rather than us working for a year and then giving them a big bill at the end of the year. It's much more friendly to say, look, we'll charge you in advance. If they pay on standing order, they get a discount as well. Mm-hmm. On what our normal fee would be. So that's the way we run it is, you know, it helps our cash rate, helps their cash rate, helps everybody to get on rather than it being big lumpy bills. I mean, a survey was done a few years ago, apparently the biggest bugbear for clients of accountants was surprise bills. So I tell them up front, this is what we're going to charge you based on, this is the quality of records we need from you and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
If they don't stick to it, I'll say, well, look, you've got a choice now. You can either take it away.
Yeah.
And bring it up to standard, or I can do it for you, but for a small extra charge.
Yep.
So everyone knows from day one what the charge is going to be, what the services are going to be. If they're not happy with it, we can negotiate a bit. But at the end of the day, I've got to charge a reasonable fee for what I do.
Absolutely, of course, and for your expertise and all the rest of it. And you're absolutely right. But also, you've also recognised, which is brilliant, and funnily enough, Martin and I were having a discussion about this in terms of lawyers earlier, about the dinosaur tendency of various diplodocus firms, which is most of them, and their penchant for still charging you for stuff like letters when, you know, I just go, can't you text them? No. Yeah, go on, get WhatsApp. It's free. You don't have to charge me 200 quid for a letter then.
Yeah.
But with accounting firms, for small businesses, having an open-ended professional service is not viable for them because you just can't plan your cash flow.
Exactly.
So I get entirely what you're saying. Of course, you deserve to be paid for the work that you do, but as long as people know what that is and can make the right decisions based on that, that's where you need to be, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Cool. So from my point of view as a business person and as an entrepreneur, I've always made it a point of having a close relationship with my accountant, and she's been with me an awful long time since I first started my business. When you were still at school. I was just waiting for it to come in. But basically, the thing that I like about that is that it is about having a relationship.
Yeah.
My accountant knows and understands me and my business. They don't only understand my business, they understand my lifestyle, they understand all kinds of things about where I am, so that they can advise me on the kind of things I want to do. They know me, they know my risk profile, they know the kind of things I will do and the kind of things I won't do and what I care about and what I don't care about, you know. So they go to me every year, they go, Paul, you ought to put money in your pension. I go, go away, I'm not interested. And they go, we're just advising you, you know, for the 25th consecutive year, you haven't put anything in your pension. We think you should. We're just telling you. And I go, I'm not going to. I'm never going to retire. I'm going to live forever or something. So
be nice.
It's about having that relationship where people know you and you know them, I do believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. Yeah. It's, I mean, I talk to the clients as regularly as I can.
Mm.
They always, in fact, one of them phoned me while on air about half an hour ago. I didn't ask her, obviously, because we were doing this. But I speak to the clients regularly. Yeah, I know what they need, what they help. They don't always necessarily want to hear what I've got to tell them.
Right.
But at the end of the day, you know, I'm there to advise them. Yeah. And it's their business. If they take the advice, that's great. If they don't want to take the advice, then that's fine too.
Yeah.
But at the end of, you know, we're there to help them.
Yeah.
And it's not, we're not just there to do people's accounts and tell them what their tax is. And we can spot, as you said, with the, you need to be able to read the figures. We try and do monthly management accounts with some of our clients, and we can spot early if there's an impending problem. Like, for example, you've got this big customer who's not paying you.
Yep.
You need to sort this out, because if they're too busy running the business, running around, you know, doing building work, whatever it is they're doing, they may not necessarily see that cash flow issue until they try and go and pay for something. It's like, actually, my card doesn't work.
Very hard to keep on top of invoices and all that when you're out doing the grafting, isn't it?
Yeah, and we do use Free Agent, the online portal, for some clients as well, which is a live system. It's on the internet, and they can get an app for their phone, so they can go out and do a job. They can raise the invoice on their phone and ping
that
it off.
That sounds a good one. Free Agent.
Free Agent, yeah, and ping it off to their customer while they're there. And if you get one of these iZettle things for your phone, you can plug it in your phone and get the guy to pay you while you're there.
Absolutely.
So you ping the email off to him, the invoice, and, oh, by the way, here's your email, now you can pay me.
We're big supporters of iZettle. Mm-hmm. They actually have been a sponsor of the Business Bunker Show and been on the show in the past, actually. For those that don't know, iZettle are a Swedish-based, with a UK presence, credit card handler. But it's really easy, really easy way to set up a credit card account. I did notice, Peter, on the Twitter that you tweeted a couple of times about sugar tax. So I just wanted to kind of ask you about that. Was that you, Jules, looking?
No, it wasn't.
Was that your phone going? Blurp?
No, my phone's on site. It's probably Martin White again.
Was it?
Probably.
Did you pop?
I think it was an actual real tractor outside.
Oh, was it?
We are in Romney Marsh.
Yeah, yeah. So it wasn't an impersonation that you did. Did tractors.
No. Although
Andrew Weaver's been very, very, very complimentary about your Mark Yarwood stuff. Yeah. Anyway, coming back to somebody sensible.
Peter, Andrew Weaver's not sensible. But,
no, it's you that's not sensible. Peter, sugar tax.
Yeah. Well, I'm obviously not a nutritionist, so I think the sugar tax is the theory behind it of making people more healthy is a good thing. Mm. I think it's more. It's not necessarily a revenue-raising idea. It's more like the plastic bag charge from Tesco's.
Yeah.
They don't want you to take the bag. Mm. The fact that it cost you 5p wasn't the issue. It was just don't have the bag.
Yeah.
And what they're trying to do, I think, is educate people. You don't have to have sugar. Sugar in your drinks. Have something.
But the thing is, with that whole, I don't want to harp on because it's not a food show, but the whole thing about the sugar tax is my dad and Paul's generation dad grew up having sugar in their tea, 2-3 sugars. Mm. You know, you speak to older generation, they all did. The fact is, it's the food manufacturers who are shoving sugar and flour and all the stuff we don't want into everything. Mm. That's the problem.
There's a classic of unjoined up politics. I'm not going to get too political here, but God, some of them. They announced a sugar tax on soft drinks and then froze the duty on cider, which has got more sugar in it than anything. And you go, it's not working, really.
If you buy, for example, a Marks and Spencer chicken breast, it has brown sugar in it. Ready cooked chicken breast has brown sugar in it. So you think you're having a healthy savoury and you're having sugar.
Yeah. Yeah, there's as much sugar in ketchup as using.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you're absolutely right, Peter. It, you know, the overall direction, which is to try to encourage people away from sugar, is an admirable thing. We all consume too much sugar. I'm not entirely convinced that a sugar tax is the answer myself, personally, because I don't think it covers enough things for a start.
People still go out and have a whatever.
Mm. Yeah, and they do try and tell you that the tax is only there to discourage people from doing things. So are they then telling me that by heavily taxing businesses, they'd like us not to do business?
Well,
so their message gets mixed.
Yeah. And also, what they should be saying is read labels.
Yeah.
And cook.
What we should have is more uniform labels, in which they're not allowed, because you get things that say fat-free. It doesn't mean anything.
No, exactly.
You didn't put any fat in it. So what? It doesn't mean it's healthy. No. It doesn't mean it's low calorie. It just means it's got less fat in than something else you produced.
There's a big backlash now against fat-free stuff, and we're actually going now towards eating fat.
Yeah.
There's been a whole thing.
Lard sandwich.
Anyway, enough of that.
That has nothing to do with accountancy and macaroni. I suppose it does have something to do with macaroni, as long as you don't put sugar on your macaroni. You wouldn't want to do that, would you?
Nah.
Do you like macaroni?
I do.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
Now you're going off the subject.
Well, it's my show.
He's allowed to.
Yeah. So. So for you, Peter, where are you heading? Where's next for macaroni? What are you trying to achieve?
Well, we're looking to grow organically, and I do a lot of networking. Right. I'm obviously joined Supply My Business. I'm in a few other networking groups, and it's about getting the word out, getting the name out, and because everyone who I meet asks, "Why do you call it macaroni?" And then make some joke about cheese. So it's a good icebreaker. It gets people talking about what we do. And what we're here to help people with. So we're basically looking to grow organically from where we are. We just finished our first year. And it's all we do work with startups as well. Not a lot of accountants will touch startups because of the failure rate. But as a startup ourselves, we know what's
crucial,
involved.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
That those first 4, 5, 6 months are absolutely crucial to get because they're busy as well.
And also, it's the right time. It's the right time to get your practices and processes established. And so many businesses don't do it from the outset. But that's the time to do it, when you've actually got time. When you've got no customers and you're not doing anything, you need to get the structure of your business right. You need to get your accounting systems in place. You choose the package you're going to use. Most people use an accounting package of some kind now, be it Sage or Xero or ClearBooks or any of the other packages that are available. Do you specialise in a particular package or do you recommend it?
Some of our clients use Sage anyway. Yeah. Some clients I've had already, they use it themselves. It's because pretty much everyone does that's ever done bookkeeping. But we use Free Agent for our online guys. We've got quite a few city traders and IT guys. They're pretty tech savvy. They quite like the fact that it's there. It tells them, it keeps a running total of what their tax bill is and how much money they can draw out, and they can do their invoicing, on their phones. So that, I think, is, everyone talks about it being the future. I think that's the now. I mean, everyone is using, Xero has come on leaps and bounds since I first heard about it about 10 years ago. About three people used it about 10 years ago. Now it's everywhere. And Free Agents are a similar idea. Just Accounts is another one that one of our contacts uses. We help them with the bookkeeping support for their clients. So that's where it's always this stuff that's in the cloud. As an older accountant, I prefer Sage, to be honest. I understand it. I'm learning how this new stuff works. But we've got John and Laura in the office who are much younger than me, and they've got much more energy and time to understand how the thing works. So I just say, look, John, just make it work. I don't really mind how it works. Just get it done.
A bit of Captain Kirk there.
Yeah.
Make it so.
Yeah, make it so. So that's where we are. We're looking to grow. We have a contact who with a employment agency, and a lot of their people that are currently on umbrella payroll, the employment agency actually want them to set up PSCs rather than be on employment. So there's a new avenue of work for us.
Right.
So that's basically where we are, is just trying to get the word out and attract mainly limited company clients. I don't have an issue dealing with the self-employed, but, we want to specialise in limited company clients. So
cool. Give us a shout for your website.
The website is macaroniaccounting.co.uk.
And your Twitter handle?
It's Peter, at Peter Macca, MACAACC.
Fantastic. Peter Annan, Macaroni Accounting, thank you so much for joining us on the Business Punk Show. Absolute pleasure to hear from you. We wish you much success as you drive your business forward, and do stay with us for the rest of the show.
Thank you.
Brilliant. We've had a tweet from Tenterton Twilight, and they said, just back in time for the second half of the Business Bunker Show. And then they've got a couple of hashtags that says Crazy World, Tenterton, Beautifully Clean.
They've been polishing it up.
They've been polishing Tenterton while I'm away.
I wonder if they went by your gaff.
Don't even get me started on that.
Why?
I had some funny things happen this morning. I broke the USB pop-up in my kitchen, in my new kitchen,
you
for a start.
Did that a week ago?
Yeah, yeah.
You broke and it then, again? You
yeah,
mean?
This morning I was brushing my teeth in my sink.
Have you still got your teeth?
No, no, listen, shut up. I was brushing my teeth and I turned the cold tap on and the tap shot out of the sink onto the floor. The whole tap assembly, yeah.
Were you brushing them in the kitchen?
No.
Oh, that's a and basin. Then, it's a basin.
And then you'll like this. My lunch arrived on its own.
What was your lunch?
I was stood in the kitchen. You've been in my kitchen, yeah?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden there's this massive banging. And there's no one else. I live on my own. There's no one else in my house. There's this massive banging. And I'm looking around and I look across the kitchen. I can't see a thing. And it's bang, 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 bang. So I walk towards the door. You know, back door of my kitchen.
Yeah.
There's a pheasant. And he stood outside banging on the door.
Really?
So I opened the door and I expected him to run off and he just walked into the kitchen.
Oh.
And I said, the pots are over there, pluck yourself, jump in.
Slow cooker.
That's what you call a takeaway, isn't it?
That's so sweet. So is he still in your kitchen?
When I left he was just wandering around my kitchen.
That's so sweet. You see, that could be a reincarnation of someone, couldn't it, Irene?
No, it could just be dinner, to be honest.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So there you go.
Well, there you are. The tales of, you know, Tenterden for you.
Kent Tweetups have been tweeting as well.
And what have they said?
Oh, a load of old nonsense.
Can you read
She's jolly good at social media and PR, they said.
Oh, well, did they?
Yeah,
well,
it was part of a conversation about your Mike Yarwood-type skills.
Oh, they're chatting to Andrew impersonation. Reader,
yeah,
they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Kent Business Tweetups, kentbusinesstweetup.co.uk, I believe.
Absolutely.
Free events.
We're going to talk to our next guest now, though.
Who is it?
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the Business Bunker Show for the first time the lovely Jane Chakravorty of Invicta Linux. Jane, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Paul and Jules. It's an absolute pleasure and hugely entertaining.
A little bit warm in here, isn't it?
It is a tad warm. Oh. Mind you, it's a bit full up as well. We're a bit crowded. We've only got 2 weeks to go before we're in our new studio, which has got a lot more room.
Oh, where's that?
Ashford.
Brilliant.
Martin can plan my I can actually walk from Tenterden to Ashford easier than I can walk from Tenterden to here. It's still quite a way, but anyway, enough of that. I want to start off, Jane. Do forgive me for this. I do know, because my background is in IT, but a lot of our listeners out there won't have a clue what Invicta Linux means even. So why don't you tell us a little bit about you and a bit about Licta Invinus, or in fact, Invicta Linux.
Makes it quite interesting.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your business and what it does, and then we can discuss the Linux bit in a minute.
Okay, so we're in IT support and service. Mm. I've been in the IT industry for more years than I can remember. And we set up a few years ago, as we saw the IT industry was being separated, really, as Microsoft were withdrawing its small business servers, very yep. popular range. And it was really forced people to go into the cloud.
Yeah.
And lots of people didn't like that whole, you know, public cloud, and with good reason, in fact.
Pete will tell you, because he knows, I'm of an age where I know there's no such thing as the cloud. It doesn't exist. It's just someone else's computer.
Exactly.
It's a bit like heaven, really.
It's really a euphemism for the internet. It's just data flying through the traffic to land some. And most people often don't even know where.
Where? Yeah, they don't even know who's got it. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And even if you do your due diligence, I've known companies that have found out they've got a replica server over in South Africa. So it's well away from the EU regulations. But so anyway, that's one. But, you know, nonetheless, I think cloud computing can be good, particularly for small businesses, because you don't have the overheads of getting a server and getting... So there's that, or there's a huge enterprise solutions, and you get small, you know, 20, 25 users, even up to 50, that really don't need those kind of systems. They're hugely expensive to maintain, to continuously buy the licenses for. So we looked at what we've loved for years, actually, which is something called open source, specifically Linux, and that's it. Rather than being proprietary software, it's community-led, really, and it's developed by the community and available for everyone for pretty much free. That's not to say the skills and the services are free, obviously, but for instance, you have Microsoft Office, which is quite a hefty buy. It's not for students and it's not for kids, but as soon as you leave university, suddenly you have to buy the whole caboodle. Yeah. Well, there's LibreOffice sitting there. It's perfectly good. It's perfectly functional in many ways, exactly. Unless you're a real power user and you create macros all the time, then really LibreOffice will do for you. And I think it's a quite a sin, really, that our government squanders millions and millions of pounds on Microsoft licenses when it could use LibreOffice.
It seems a little bit unfair, doesn't it?
It is. It is unfair. And I think a lot of it's to do with the fact of what we're used to. People don't like change. Nobody likes change.
Absolutely. That's the point, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. So yeah. You grow up, and of course Microsoft gives a... I'm really not against Microsoft. I love Microsoft.
I am.
Okay, well, I'll let you. But... you know, they give their software to schools for free and then to universities. So, of course, when people leave universities and start in industry, that's all they're used to. Exactly. But it really, it's not fair. And I think the world is changing now. The Internet of Things is all open source. Stephen Hawking's voice recognition is open source.
Yeah.
And I think a smaller... and smaller section of society will stick with Microsoft in the long run. Because apart from which, how do you get your data back? It's all there in some...
Well, no, Microsoft... we don't want to make this a program about Microsoft, obviously.
No.
But Microsoft do amaze me. They've introduced, you know, Windows 10, which I hate with a vengeance. I just think it's horrible. And they've left a small business with no alternative. You've got to move away because they haven't offered you anything in its place. You know, so you have to start looking at Linux or Ubuntu or, you know, or in my case, I just moved to Apple. And a lot of people don't realise that iOS is actually based on Unix.
Yes,
So, you know, it is just a Unix platform, which is in itself is an open source platform.
As is your Android phone. So so many things are built on. People, you know, they don't realise it's something weird. And it used to be something that, you know, you really could only mention if you had a big bushy beard and you were wearing trainers. And
I can't imagine it would suit you, Jane.
No. Thank you. But, it is a changing platform, I think. But, of course, they do, LibreOffice, you can download it for Windows systems as well, I should say. Yeah. But certainly if you had an old laptop, for instance, you could put something like Ubuntu Mint on it, and it's a perfect operating system, and people can actually change from Windows to that quite simply and cheaply, freely, and use your old bit of kit.
I had... this won't mean anything to anyone. I had an old 386 PC stuck in the back of my cupboard. And somebody said to me, do you know what? He said, it was a geek. He said, if you avoid Microsoft, that's still a perfectly serviceable computer. And really? And he went, it's years old. He went, no, seriously, if you don't run Microsoft on it, it will work a dream. So I loaded a version of Red Hat Linux on it. It blew away my 20-year newer PC. It just blew it away in performance, and it was a clapped-out 386 PC, 8086 chip.
It's so much faster, and it takes so much, less power resources as well.
Absolutely.
So it is very good. And of course, it can run. We build firewalls, so security, and obviously our particular PCs are built with Ubuntu, but we also support Microsoft. You can have anything you want on the front end. You can use Apple, whatever. We've got marketing companies that use a mixture of different operating systems on their desktops, but they have that very robust, secure server at the back end, processing all the data and so forth.
So do you specialise more in that back end server stuff? Is that where you are, or do you support the whole thing?
We can do, well, no, we support the whole thing. You have to, really. You can't really afford to. It's, we were talking earlier on about collaboration, and we bring people in for the skills that we don't have, like if somebody wants data cabling or something like that. And we know quite a lot of people that do the extraterrestrial WiMAX signals as well.
Very fast, you mean?
And we also do private cloud, so that gives you, because of course cloud's brilliant because you can be absolutely anywhere and still access your data or share it.
Yeah.
So it makes the businesses very agile. But of course, if you're putting your data on the private public cloud, then, well, we've talked about the dangers of that, and there's been so many cases now with Dropbox being, you know, hacked and so forth. So we do a private cloud as well, again built on open source solutions, which is in fact far cheaper than you'd think. And you can just put it in your office, put all your data on it, share your data with anyone, access it from anywhere. So it's just like the cloud, only it's yours, it's private, it's under your control. You know who's got it.
So you've got your own kind of private network, you've got your own private cloud, so it's not accessible by people that you don't know.
Exactly.
And you know where your data is, but you've got all the benefit of it still being in the cloud, per se.
Absolutely.
And you can access it from anywhere.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get too technical and arcane here, because, but I mean, if I had that in my organisation, in order for me to access it, do I have to have a VPN, or can it be purely from the web?
From the web. All you'd do is go into a website. You'd have a strong password. The data would be encrypted, but you could access it from your iPad, your smartphone, any PC. It's just like logging in. So, and you could share it as well. You can share it either by email or by creating a guest account, which is why it's quite good for marketing companies, because they've got large files, so they can just share a space. So it's obviously different protocol than actually emailing it, because emails, you try and, you know, email a large file and you'll
forget it. You could come back in four days. I could walk to Tenterden in the time it takes to upload one of those. Can you give us a flavor, Jane, of the type of businesses that Invicta Linux targets? What is your target market? What's the type of businesses? Is there any particular type, or do you, you know, look after anyone really?
We look after anyone. We do offer fourth line support for larger businesses, but in fact, what I suppose our target market is 25 users, sub 25 users.
Right. Sorry, did you say sub 25? So up to 25 users.
Yes, indeed. And really, I suppose what we do, but these days, you see, the thing is that there could be one person sitting there who's in marketing or design or something, but their file sizes and the amount of emails that they might have to generate could be colossal, so they might need a file. So it depends on the software applications that they're using and what they're doing with their data. So there could be a 25-user organization that only, you know, has one email account for info at and nothing else. So that's, you know, so it's a huge changing world.
Oh, without a doubt, without a doubt. Don't even get me started on some of the problems I've had just recently from certain ISPs that shall not be named, who take it on themselves to do things that they really shouldn't do. But I suppose when I get round to issuing some legal challenges, they'll think about it. But, you know, basically, we've had ISPs blacklisting our email accounts because we send too many emails. Oh, so sorry.
Really?
Yeah. You know, it happens. We do send a lot of emails, but they're opt-in emails. You know, but anyway,
it's
whatever.
It's amazing. If you have a hosted service, that's even more. We've just changed our accountants over from a hosted VoIP service to on-premise server. Because there were so many restrictions in their hosted service, they couldn't go over a certain amount and bandwidth. And every time they wanted a change done, it would cost them a fortune. So, but now they can manage it on their own. So that's perhaps the same for email as well. It helps having a local service.
Jane, fascinating topic. We could talk about it forever. Thank you for sharing that with us. It's been an absolute pleasure to see you here. Can you give us a shout out for your web address and then your Twitter handle so that people can find out more about you?
Yes, indeed. It's www.invictalinux.co.uk. That's LINUX. And the Twitter handle is @InvictaLinux.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us
on
the Business Bank Show. It's an absolute pleasure to hear from you, and we wish you continued success in promoting open source access. keep on keeping on.
Thank you.
Right, it's that time in the show now, Jules.
Channel Radio News Update.
Yes. It's that time in the show where we bring you news from the Federation of Small Business.
We do indeed, Paul Andrews. It's the companies that are required to make available, coming up on the public register, a list of all people with significant control over the business.
I'm just pointing at Peter about this. This is ridiculous. It's one of the most ridiculous red tape things I've heard.
Listen out. I'm sure you know about it, Peter, and you can comment. Further provisions of the Small Business Enterprise and Employment Act of 2015 will be brought into force by the end of May of this year and will affect all companies in some way. Though given royal assent in March 2015, the Act has been brought into force in stages. Scheduled to be enforced by April of 2016 this year is the requirement for companies to make available a register of people with significant control over the company on the Public Register of Companies House, also known as the PSC register. The relevant people are defined in the Act as individuals who directly or indirectly hold more than 25% of shares in the company, 25% of the voting rights on the company, the right directly or indirectly to appoint a majority of the board of directors of the company, or has the right to exercise significant influence over the company. Relevant people may fall under one or more of the set criteria. The Act places a duty on companies to investigate, update, and obtain information on their registrable persons. I love the word persons. As a result, companies will be required to take reasonable steps to identify such persons, including making inquiries of other persons where the company has reasonable cause to believe that the person knows.
I think we've had enough of that. Jules. I think we'll stop there. Basically, the government have introduced another piece of meaningless red tape just to annoy small businesses, that now means we need to list a certain set of people that the government have decided they need to know about, who may or may not have some control over a business because they may or may not own more than 25% of the shares or 25% of the voting rights.
Yeah.
Is that about it?
Pretty much, yeah.
But why do they write it in that ludicrous speech?
Not my question. My question is, why on earth do they even need it? I don't even understand what, you know, we've got a company's house, we list company directors.
Yeah.
Why do we need this? What possible purpose does it serve?
Who came up with the idea?
It's ridiculous. It's more government interference for the sake of it.
Peter?
Well, it's intended to replace the annual return, which you do anyway. If once a year, every company has to sends a form of the annual return, which tells you who the directors are and who the shareholders are. There is only a legal requirement, I think it's every 3 years, to name the shareholders, but most of us, well, I don't, we just say the same information every year. Because most of my clients, I mean, people like Jane as well, there's one or two people involved, and you own the shares.
Yeah.
And that's it. And it never changes. I mean, if a bigger company, someone like, you know, Marks and Spencer's, well,
or Vodafone, or
those guys, it's worthwhile. But for a small business, it's just taking one form and replacing another.
Well, more news from the FSB. The leadership skills shortfall is holding back UK economy, says the FSB. A lack of leadership and management skills is hampering the growth potential of small businesses and acting as a brake on productivity, according to a new report which was published today by the Federation of Small Businesses, the FSB. Leading the way, boosting leadership and management in small firms shows how policymakers, small businesses and partners in the private sector can join forces to tackle the UK's leadership and management skills deficit. Only a quarter of small firms questioned, that's 25%, had undertaken management training in the last 12 months. One in four had never undergone any form of management training at all. And FSB also found that fewer smaller businesses seek external management training for staff, with just a fifth offering such training to their employers. So check out that Leading the Way, Boosting Leadership and Management. Have you got it on your Kent Business Radio, that... registration or
There are links. There are links to the FSB pages that contain all of this data.
So we can check it out.
Yeah, you can. All of the stuff we cover in this section of the show from the FSB. If you go to the Kent Business Radio website, there's a link to the FSB pages where all of this stuff can be looked at, and it can be looked at in more depth. You know, there's a load of there's pages and pages of stuff behind some of this. This one is completely worrying as well. An informal exchange of emails, boys and girls, can constitute a variation of terms of a contract, even when the contract states that any variation must be in writing with the signed agreement of both parties. In the case of CNS Associates UK Limited and Enterprise Insurance Company, the High Court has now set a precedent and held that an informal exchange of emails can constitute a variation of terms and conditions, even where a contract term provided for variation to be in writing and signed on behalf of both parties.
That's one to watch, isn't it?
Yeah, so basically what they're saying is, in pool speak, is even though you've got a contract that says the only way you can alter the T's and C's is by signing this, the High Court decided it isn't. If you send them an email saying something else, then they'll take that as the binding agreement.
Well, of course,
well that's going to make
is,
it all clear, isn't it?
An email is written, isn't it? That's the trouble.
It is. But you've got, you know, I can imagine that causing a whole heap of grief because presumably things that you write in an email are open to massive interpretation that is slightly different to a fixed contract that has some fixed terms in it. If you go, no, you can stick it where the sun don't shine, which is the kind of thing I write in an email, has that changed my terms and conditions to placing things in a place that I don't want them?
Yeah.
If you see what I mean.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Worrying.
Yeah. Let's move on to something else. The FSB, creating high quality jobs. The issue, small and micro businesses have created the highest number of jobs since the recession. A study by the IPPR from April 2014 shows 84% of new jobs created in the private sector between 2010 and 2013 were in small or medium-sized businesses or in self-employment. Small firms are more likely to play a social as well as an economic role. This is where we were talking earlier, Martin, about collaboration and the community, compared to large companies. Boo. They employ the unemployed, long-term sick, people with disabilities and students, yet many small firms struggle to overcome the barriers to recruitment, especially first-time employers. The FSB has taken action by calling on policymakers to recognise the crucial role small businesses play in creating high-quality jobs in local communities, lobbying the Treasury for employment allowance to be increased to help businesses take on staff, to increase training and to increase rates of pay, and promoting the benefits of flexible working for productivity performance and for aiding recruitment among small employers. We want our policymakers to help build an environment that encourages job creation and provides practical support for small firms, and the FSB will continue lobbying the government for those things.
Charities are now able to file accounts online with the Companies House. Charities can submit their accounts digitally with Companies House after a successful consultation carried out by the Charity Commission and the Financial Reporting Council. The consultation was about proposed updates to the charity taxonomy. I like that word.
Taxonomy. It's another word you can't say.
Or classification.
The inaugural plethora of taxonomy.
Classification system. Companies House uses to identify or analyse pieces of financial data in accounts. The updated taxonomy now meets the requirements of the charity SORP and Financing Reporting Standards FRS 102, which the Commission claims will make the filing of accounts quicker and easier. Now, currently around 70% of companies already do file their accounts online, we're told, with Companies House, but this was not an option for charities until the new taxonomy was introduced. Did you know that the government must step up efforts on small business procurement? Another word.
She's struggling.
Another word.
For the inaugural plethora of taxonomy procurement.
I might have your sort of teeth.
You got my teeth.
Commenting on the National Audit Office, the NAO, report on government spending with small and medium-sized enterprises, Mike Cherry, the policy director of the Federation of Small Businesses, has said that the NAU has acknowledged government efforts to remove barriers and that prevent smaller businesses from bidding for public contracts. But there's still much work to be done, he says, to spread good practice across the public sector. As the report points out, recent initiatives have brought some positive changes and progress relies on the willingness of individual procurers to implement them. So that's interesting, and find out more on kentbusinessradio.co.uk.
Thank you all. The Department for Business, Innovation and Skills and Department for Culture, Media and Sport are to conduct a joint review of business broadband following concerns raised by industry that existing services may be inadequate and too expensive to satisfy future demand. You're damn right. The wide-ranging review will look to improve business access to broadband and will explore how government can increase the level of affordable, high-quality fibre broadband available to businesses across the UK. Another priority will be exploring how to facilitate choice and competition in the market with a view to delivering a better service at a reduced cost to business. Oh, here's an idea. How about having more than one company involved? Just a thought.
Yeah.
New national insurance guides have been published. HM Revenue and Customs has published a new guide for employers to assist with the new national insurance contributions relief for apprentices who are under the age of 25. The changes, which come into force from the 6th of April 2016, will result in employers not having to pay Class 1 national insurance contributions on earnings of apprentices below £827 per week. How on earth did they arrive at that figure?
Yeah.
This is provided that the apprentice is under 25 and is following an approved apprenticeship programme. In order to apply for the national insurance relief, employers need to provide evidence to HMRC, such as a written agreement between the employer, the apprentice and the training provider, confirming the apprentice is on an approved scheme and the start and end date of said apprenticeship. There you go.
I think that's about all we've got time for,
I think it is. So
I could cram another one in
here. Yeah, that concludes our...
Channel Radio News Update.
And that concludes our Channel Radio News Update from the Federation of Small Business for this week on Tuesday, the 22nd of March, 2016. We're almost at the end of the show. We've still got tweets coming in. We've still got dozens of emails.
Been packed.
So have you got anything there that needs to be read from a date point of view?
No, I don't think so, Paul Andrews.
Are you sure?
Well, let me look.
Just in case, we don't like to miss a date on this programme.
There's Laura's Ball, but that's not till the 8th of October.
Yeah, I can tell you that on Friday the 22nd of April, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m, is the Seven Oaks Business Show. It's business networking, presentations and exhibitions, and there's 100 goodie bags on offer. It's a great little show. I went to it last year. Now then, on my thingy here, on my piece of paper about this, it says the show is to be opened by the Right Honourable Michael Fallon, MP, Secretary of State for Defence. But I got an email from Seven Oaks Town Council this morning that said, you wouldn't know someone that would open the Seven Oaks Business Show for us, so maybe they need somebody else. So if anybody fancies opening the show, do let me know.
And what's the date?
It's Friday the 22nd of April, and it's from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m, and it's taking place in the Plaza Suite at the Stag Theatre. That's in London Road,
Seven Oaks. So if there's anyone with a Seven Oaks slant there, that would be quite good, wouldn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. But we're kind of wending our way towards the end of the show.
It's been a cracking show.
It has indeed. We've covered some fabulously different things,
yes.
and we'll summarise them in a moment. But first of all, I want to tell you what's coming up later on Channel Radio. Immediately, well, not immediately after this, but at 4 o'clock today, we have the lovely Natalie Beneig with the Kent Creative Live Show, discussing arts, creativity, and all the clever things that happen in Kent and the Kent creative industries.
Avec a little bit of français.
Avec un peu.
Oui.
Un peu. Peut-être. Français. Yeah. So lovely Natalie, she'll punch me when she gets here. She hates me doing things like that. Monsange, son d'arbre.
She can teach you some more, I'm sure.
Yeah, she's sick and tired of my monkey being up a tree. So I've completely lost the plot now. So that's at 4 o'clock, Kent Creative Live. That's followed at 5 o'clock by the latest favourite, Mr. Craig Avery, with his stripy socks.
Is he improving?
I don't know. He's just been trying to ring me, so I don't know what's going on there, but he's trying to ring me, so maybe he wants me to do something for him, or maybe he's going to be late or something. I don't know.
More socks.
But, yeah. But anyway, at 5 o'clock, we have Mr. Craig Avery with the Craig Avery Show, a show looking at the entertainment industry and with lots of interesting interviews and stuff like that. That is followed at 7 o'clock by...
Welcome on to the New Potatoes Show.
18 tracks of unsigned new and up-and-coming music, hand-chosen for you by Mr. Jamie Andrews on the New Potatoes Show from 7 till 9 this evening. And Jamie and New Potatoes is followed at 9 o'clock by our 60s comedy show, I was Lord Kitchener's valet. And we round off the evening, as always, with...
It's Club Culture with Boy George.
One, two, three, get down!
Cool drum beat at the squidgy bass, I give you Vanilla Ace, and it rhymes. That means I'm right on time. Welcome to Club Culture, where I control my very own dance universe. 1 hour or more of grooving delectables for your disco pleasure. I'm Boy George.
It's 1 hour of delectable, delicious dance music. It's Club Culture with Boy George on Channel Radio.
So we finish off the evening, as always, on a Tuesday evening with Club Culture with the wonderful Boy George. But you've been listening to the Business Bunker Show with me, Paul Andrews, and the stonkingly gorgeous Jules Serkin, and our fabulous guest, the lovely Lindsay Reynolds from Kent County Council. Kent Connected Project, which we love to bits already. We heard from Martin White of Supply My Business, and he introduced us to the fantastic Macaroni Accounting with Mr. Peter Allen, and the absolutely delightful Jane Chakravorty of Invicta Linux.
And how to lose your keys in 24 hours.
And we learned that, how to lose your keys. Well, we learned all kinds of things. Ooh. But it's been an absolute pleasure to share a couple of hours with you on a Tuesday afternoon, as always. We will be back with you next week for the Business Bunker Show. In the meantime, take care, and we'll see you all next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
Ollie Clark for joining us on today's show. We also...